Turn your tax refund into a new garage door at Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Increase your home's value with a new Ideal garage door. From traditional to modern, Menards has a garage door to enhance your home's appearance. Choose from our large in-stock selection or design your own using our free garage door design program. Check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up over the next hour, we'll have continued fallout from the altercation within the England camp between Raheem Sterling and Joe Gomez in light of Liverpool's 3-1 win against Manchester City on Sunday. We'll also be talking a little bit more about Manchester City to come in this hour. We'll be hearing a little bit more on West Ham. How much pressure is Manuel Pellegrini under? Talking about Norwich, they're now down at the bottom of the table. Is Daniel Farke one of those managers down there that is unlikely to lose his job, even if Norwich get relegated, as well as some news for the Longstaff brothers, Pep Guardiola at VAR, and Liverpool's transfer business. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp here on the Premier League Fan Show. So plenty to talk about over the next hour. That number again, 0208 7020 558, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon. Only one place to start, and it is within the England camp. And the news broke overnight, late last night, and has developed as the morning and the afternoon is going along, and we're getting more and more details. And it came out last night that there had been some sort of altercation, a clash between Raheem Sterling and Joe Gomez. We found out that Raheem Sterling had been dropped from the England squad ahead of the game on Thursday against Montenegro. Still, as far as we know, he is in contention for Sunday's game against Kosovo, and he is training with England today. Now, as I said, the story has developed more and more, and we are continuing to find out more and more, so it is very much a developing story. Now, Raheem Sterling has admitted that emotions got the better of him after being dropped for that qualifier against Montenegro. Originally, the FA had just said that he'd been dropped as a result of a disturbance in a private team area. Raheem Sterling then took to social media to confirm a 5 to 10 second thing had occurred with Joe Gomez in the England camp, but added that the pair were now good. If you remember back to Sunday's game between Liverpool and Manchester City, Joe Gomez and Raheem Sterling had an on-field argument during that game. Via his Instagram account, Raheem Sterling says, "Both Joe and I have had words and figured out things and moved on. We're in a sport where emotions run high, and I'm man enough to admit when emotions got the better of me. This is why we play this sport, because of our love for it. Me and Joe Gomez are good. We both understand it was a 5 to 10 second thing. It's done. We move forward and not make this bigger than it is. Let's focus on our game on Thursday." Gareth Southgate said that unfortunately the emotions of yesterday's game were still raw. That was said yesterday referring to Sunday's game. "One of the great challenges and strengths for us is that we've been able to separate club rivalries from the national team. We have taken the decision to not consider Raheem for the match against Montenegro on Thursday. My feeling is that the right thing for the team is the action we have taken. Now that the decision has been made with the agreement of the entire squad, it's important that we support the players and focus on Thursday night." Now, that kind of the rivalries, separate club rivalries, has been something that we've heard for years, going back to sort of the era of Lampard, Gerrard, Ferdinand, Terry, Neville, Cole, that we heard that there were real fractions within the England camp, that whenever the England players went on international duty, that the Liverpool players would sit with the Liverpool players, the Manchester United players would sit with the Manchester United players, etc., etc. They would be quite divided, but we haven't quite in public heard it. Now, this is not to say, and I think the point is being made on social media today, don't think that this is the first time ever on England duty that two players have had some sort of altercation. I'm sure it has happened plenty of times. Gareth Southgate, the England manager, has decided, rather than cover it up and then potentially it come out later down the line. He has decided to get on the front foot with this, be honest, be completely upfront with it and perhaps defuse the situation rather than allow it to potentially blow up in his face later down the line. Now, what is believed has happened is that in the canteen, in I know it sounds like a 10-year-old schoolboy incident, doesn't it? In the canteen, Raheem Sterling was already sat in there. Now, Joe Gomez came in and was laughing, and I don't know whether Raheem Sterling took that the wrong way, whether he felt that he was laughing at the Manchester City players or had no idea as to what exactly was being said. And he then went up to Joe Gomez and asked him whether he still felt like he was the big man. Now, as to what exactly has happened, now Joe Gomez has been pictured in training with a cut beneath his right eye. Now, we don't know exactly how that has developed, but I think we can all probably figure out exactly what has happened. But there was an altercation. He grabbed him by the neck and was perhaps trying to rile him up, and they had to then be separated. Depending on what reports you believe, some reports suggesting that Joe Gomez refused to even get involved with this. He just stepped back and thought, just get off me. I'm not even kind of going to make a situation of this. That's kind of believed to be the general consensus. Now, what was also believed is that Raheem Sterling had packed his bags and was ready to go. He was ready to leave the England camp during this international break. However, the Liverpool captain, Jordan Henderson, kind of acted as a bit of a mediator between the two to make sure that they diffuse the tension and they put it to one side, put it to bed and move on. And it seems like even though Raheem Sterling has been dropped for the game on Thursday, he is still training with England. What a coincidence that they had live coverage of England's training this morning, merely hours after this report was released. He is still in contention for Sunday's game against Kosovo, as we believe he hasn't been ruled out of that game. I think it shows the leadership qualities of someone like Jordan Henderson to step in and try and sort the situation out rather than it allowing it to potentially escalate even further. He didn't need to do this, but because he's not the England captain, actually. So it shows that he's quite clearly thinking about the squad as a whole and thinking about what's best for the team. I think the way I'd put it is that emotions do boil over, and that's understandable in all walks of life. This happens, but what I would also say is that we have it in the office where there's banter that flies around because we all support different teams. There's always going to be that chat in the office, and you have that up and down the country of people taking the mick out of each other, kind of criticizing other people's teams and slating each other. However, you get on with it. It's just a part and parcel of life. You don't in an office, if someone says, haha, your team lost at the weekend, you were rubbish, you don't suddenly go and start fronting up with them and start throttling them. That doesn't happen. So I think fair play to Raheem Sterling for coming out straight away and apologising. Granit Xhaka didn't exactly come straight out and apologise for his part in that incident. I think there's something to be said of perhaps a massive overreaction for Raheem Sterling here, that it would have probably been exactly the same if it had been the other way around. I struggle to have much sympathy with Sterling for reacting like that, because that's part and parcel of being in an England squad. There's always going to be this sort of, you move from club into international action. There's always going to be this type of chat between the group when a big game like Sunday happens. So fair play to Raheem Sterling for coming out and apologising so quickly and admitting that he was in the wrong. But at the same time, I think it's a massive overreaction from him to create a situation like this. Hopefully now that it's come out, I'm sure we'll learn more and more about it. But hopefully we've learned all we have about it, and we can move on and move forward to Thursday's game against Montenegro. I'm sure this story, though, will continue to dominate the headlines all the way up to and including after that game. So as I said, we're sure to be reacting more to that. And I'm sure as the afternoon and days go on, more developments on this will continue to come out. A couple of the other interesting storylines in the news today. For Newcastle fans out there, mixed contract news for the Longstaff brothers. Supposedly, Matty Longstaff, obviously the younger of the two, is supposedly going to sign a new contract in the next few weeks. However, his older brother Sean has been told he needs to do more to earn a second deal in 12 months. He was obviously linked to a move to Manchester United over the summer. Matty Longstaff scored on his debut against Manchester United. So it looks like one Longstaff brother is definitely going to sign a new contract. The question is, will the other one sign a new contract, or could he be plying his trade elsewhere? We were talking a little bit about Manchester City, and we will do in the next few minutes as well. Pep Guardiola, according to the Times today, will see out the final 18 months of his contract. You've seen it at Barcelona and Bayern Munich about how he has kind of specific stints and then moves on. And it's been a long time since Pep Guardiola won the Champions League. He is going to see out the final 18 months of his contract to the end of this season and the end of next season, after there were some rumours linking him with a move potentially to Serie A. And also suggesting that funds will be made available to Guardiola when the transfer window reopens in January. According to the Times today, Guardiola could sign two players in the winter transfer market. They're on the lookout for a central defender. Aymeric Laporte is still out for quite some time, and they look very shaky defensively. And an attacking player, two names that have been mentioned, Ruben Dias, the Benfica centre-back, and also Mikel Oyarzabal, the Real Sociedad winger as well. So potentially Manchester City could be spending quite a bit of money in the upcoming January transfer window. Also a bit of VAR chat, as you can expect. The clubs apparently in the Premier League are demanding action from the referees chief, Mike Riley. Sort out VAR, car crash, or scrap it now. Big changes demanded, and yet Neil Swarbrick, who has led the implementation of VAR in the Premier League, says he would give VAR a 7 out of 10 so far. I think that just highlights the problem. How deluded are you? I mean, who out there thinks that VAR would get a 7 out of 10 for its success so far this season? It's been an absolute failure, not a success. And also a really good read in the Telegraph today, a article written by Jason Burt, the chief football correspondent at the Telegraph, which is about how Liverpool use missile tracking to unearth gems. And it's an interview done with Ian Graham, the Liverpool's director of research. And it talks about how he and his team use data on every touch that every player makes during a game and where they are on the pitch, and employ optical tracking, which is something, the same technology developed by the military for tracking missiles. And he talks a little bit about Andy Robertson, who had been signed for £8 to £10 million from Hull, who'd been relegated a few years ago. That it was a weird situation because he was the best young fullback in Britain at the time, according to Ian Graham. That it was a really strange case of a really attacking fullback playing in a really poor defensive team. And I remember when we signed Andy Robertson and thinking he'll probably be a decent squad player, perhaps no more than that. And it took him 3 or 4 months to break into the team, but he's now arguably the best left back in European football at the moment, one of the best, if not the best, left backs in world football at the moment. It just shows the kind of transformation that can happen from signing for a relegated club like Hull to a Premier League side. Also talking about Mohamed Salah, who, it's been a well-known fact that Jurgen Klopp really had to be persuaded to sign him. Originally, he wasn't necessarily fully convinced to sign him for £34 million from Roma, but a lot of the transfer committee, including Michael Edwards, managed to convince him to sign him, and what a signing that has been. And he also said even if someone offered £150 million now for Mohamed Salah, the response would be no, stop wasting our time. So a really good read in the Telegraph today. Jason Burt, an interview with Ian Graham, the Liverpool director of research. It's a really, really intriguing article. I know I'm a little bit biased, but it is a very intriguing article as to what happens behind the scenes, the analysis, the research that goes into making signings, and all the finer details that are kind of researched in order to make a fully educated decision on whether someone is the right signing or not. So a really good read in the Telegraph today. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, share your views on your Premier League club starts the season, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. Up next, we'll be talking all things Manchester City.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking all things Manchester City now, and I'm delighted to say we're joined by Ian Cheeseman from the Forever Blue podcast. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Ian. Before we get on to talk about this developing story surrounding Raheem Sterling and Joe Gomez, looking back at Sunday's game, which is where I suppose that all started, Liverpool won 3-1 at Anfield against Manchester City. Guardiola said after the game that he was immensely proud of his side after their performance at Anfield. What were your biggest takeaways from Sunday's game?
Well, thanks for chatting to me this afternoon.
I mean, City were beaten, obviously, and I think that given that they were already 6 points behind, gives Liverpool a huge advantage in the title race. City's defeats against Norwich and Wolves are now perhaps even more apparent than they were before. I think a lot of City fans have thought this can be put right by going and winning at Anfield, even though they'd won there since 2003. And that didn't happen. There were obviously some contentious issues. The first goal that Fabinho scored came after two potential handballs that weren't spotted. There's been all sorts of suggestions that VAR wasn't working, which if it wasn't and the game went ahead and the crowd were told that it was working is a scandal. But obviously that's unconfirmed. But having scored that goal, I thought Liverpool, by the way, looked very, very good, very pacey on the front foot all the time. But I think perhaps some of City's injury problems are now coming home to roost. Defensively, they were not quite at the races. I mean, Fernandinho is a player who I absolutely love. Isn't a centre-back. He's much better being used in his natural position, which is just in front of the back four. John Stones is looking hesitant at the back. We had a virtual rookie, you could say, in Angelino at left-back. And obviously Bravo came in because of the injured Ederson, and Bravo's confidence has been shot by his start of his career at City as well, then being replaced by Ederson. So City were on the back foot right from the word go, and Liverpool, who were at full strength, showed what they're capable of and have expanded into a lead now that I believe we'll see them go on and win the title. Obviously, it's not over yet. There's a long way to go, but in all honesty, watching City at the moment, there could be changes, of course, in January if they go out and make a couple of significant signings. But as it stands at the moment, I think that is a bridge too far for City for this season.
You mentioned the defensive issues there, Ian. Obviously, when you take out a player like Aymeric Laporte, that's going to make a significant difference, as it is with any brilliant centre-back when you take them out. Ederson was obviously missing on Sunday as well. But one point that Gary Neville made after the game was the amount of money that City have spent on defenders that were available in that squad, both in the starting 11, Walker and Stones around £50 million each, Otamendi and Cancelo about £35 million each, Mendy not in the squad, £50 million. City have spent big money on the defence and a lot of them are not working out. So even though obviously you take out a player like Laporte for such a long period of time, obviously that's going to be a blow. But City can't necessarily complain about having defensive issues when they've spent so much money over the last 3 or 4 years on defenders, and a lot of them haven't panned out to be great signings.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the argument about the money. I feel as if it, to a certain extent, is a bit of a cheap shot, really. But Vincent Kompany, who came in and under Mark Hughes many years ago, who was a relatively modest signing, left in the summer and wasn't replaced. Stones obviously cost a fair amount of money. They were without Laporte. Otamendi wasn't huge. They've spent money in the fullback positions, that's true. Mendy's not fully recovered, and that was the reason why he was fit, but he wasn't fully back to match fitness, and that was the reason he didn't play. And Cancelo can't get in the team at the moment. So, obviously that's the line that everybody takes when they have a go at City about the money that they've spent. I'd prefer to just look at the players as they are, because the amount of money that's spent on footballers is ridiculous. The amount of wages that they get is ridiculous. You can only judge on what you see. And City were without. I mean, I think that the loss of Vincent Kompany is as crucial as anything to the way that City's season has started. He's such a huge personality, played in all the big games when they needed him towards the end of last season. Not only is he a great footballer, but he's a great leader. And I think they're missing a little bit of that at the moment. There is no replacement leader out there. You know, in the glory days of Manchester United, a lot was made of the role that Roy Keane played in that team. And I understand that, even though I don't particularly like Roy Keane. But I think the City are missing Vincent Kompany as well as, I mean, even Leroy Sané, the pace that he had and what he's done against Liverpool in past games, has been significant. And arguably the reason why City went out and signed Cancelo and Angelino in the summer was because of the long-term injury to Benjamin Mendy and because of his issues. So they've had to spend money in that sense because, unfortunately, whether we like it or not, all the teams at the top of the table, more or less, are there because of money.
You mentioned Vince and Company's there, that name there, Ian, and it was interesting, he was on the coverage on Sunday and he said that City don't need to sign a centre-back, but as you mentioned, what City have lost is not just a great player, one of the best centre-backs we've probably seen in the Premier League era, but that the effect that he has on the team in a leadership role. Do you think even if City had gone and bought a centre-back, that City would have necessarily perhaps improved massively because of the impact that Company had, maybe towards the end of his City career, maybe more off the field than he did on it, and would have just signing someone have necessarily filled that void particularly well?
None of it wasn't the right person. I mean, I know Vincent quite well. I mean, I've just written a book with him, Treble Triumph, which is out this week, which is his story of last season. And he is very modest within the pages of that book. And that was why I was over here to promote it, really. And so he would say City don't need to replace him because, arguably, the fact that he didn't reveal until he was that he was going to Pep until the day before the cup final didn't leave an awful lot of time for City to replace him. So City would have had to have done it very quickly and hadn't and it maybe thought that that was going to happen and therefore not particularly preempted it and had the time to properly identify the right player, because it has to be the right player. It's not just about a case of bringing in the right type of player. It has to be the right type of personality as well. But then when you add to it the injury to Laporte, who was emerging as probably the leader at the back, and that double whammy has definitely had, you know, a major effect on City. And so if they do go out and buy somebody, and I believe that now, obviously, they will be looking at doing that, it has to be the right type of player with a bit of experience. So instead of the normal format that City have been using, which is to sign young players, I would have thought that a more experienced player who is a leader, an established leader, would be the better fit to what City need right now.
As you mentioned, some of the reports in the papers today linking or suggesting that City might be interested both a centre-back and an attacking player. Laporte's out for a long while. Leroy Sané's still going to be out for a little bit of time as well. Are there any names that would stand out to you, Ian, as to thinking those are the types of players that City need to go and invest in? Is it paramount that City do go and invest in January in order to improve their fortunes?
Well, I think I don't like to say this because I don't want to see him go, but the feeling is that Leroy Sané, once he's fit, will still move on. Certainly the rumours are very strong that was going to happen just before he got injured, before the window shut back in August. So I wouldn't be surprised if that doesn't happen, and that may be because of homesickness or wanting to go back to Germany, but he would bring in a lot of cash, which would then be available to go out and strengthen. Obviously, City were looking, if we believe what we read, at the Ajax defender in the summer. But he's a young player, De Ligt. And Bonucci is another one that's been knocking around for a while. But what City have been very good at in recent years is bringing players in. All right, other experts, and I don't claim to be an expert in other players at other clubs, particularly in Europe, may have identified, but players I particularly wouldn't have identified. So, Aymeric Laporte, I wasn't on my radar. I didn't think, oh, City should go and sign Aymeric Laporte. So, there may be another player of that type somewhere that they've already identified, because, you know, they do have people who are very, very good at that job. Already on the radar, but I mean, in the past they were linked with Bonucci in Italy, and he's the type of player that I would have thought would fit that bill. But it needs to be somebody along those lines, I would suggest.
Just one final thing then, Ian. Obviously, there's been this altercation at the England camp between Raheem Sterling and Joe Gomez. Sterling's been dropped for Thursday's game. Do you think Gareth Southgate's gone about this in the right way? Firstly, making it public and not perhaps trying to brush it under the carpet. And two, do you think it's the right decision to drop him for Thursday's game?
Well, obviously, I wasn't there. None of us were there. So we don't know exactly what happened. So I respect Gareth Southgate. And if he thinks that's the right decision, then absolutely. There was clearly a lot of tension and you know, passive aggression, if not fully full-fledged aggression, between the two of them in the game at Anfield. I mean, there was a push into an advertising hoardings, and the two of them stood up there, and I wouldn't say face to face because Raheem Sterling's a little bit smaller, but you know, basically faced off, and I assume that had just spilled over into the dressing room. I like the fact that both of them are passionate about their clubs. If they've gone too far, and if Raheem Sterling has gone too far, then obviously that has to be dealt with. I mean, if you're in a workplace and somebody did something that was wrong, then action would be taken. The fact that it's football and that we all care so much about this sport, the fact that the manager has done what he's done in a very public way is perhaps sort of preemptive, really, in terms of the story leaking out at some point. And so I suspect that, without knowing the full details of it, that maybe this is the right way to do it, and that maybe the two of them can move on. And at the second game against Kosovo, maybe we'll see Sterling return to the fold again.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Ian. That was Ian Cheeseman from the Forever Blue podcast. And he makes a good point of the fact that if this happened in the workplace, if this happened in a normal day-to-day office, then action would be taken. That there's banter, I know that word gets thrown around a lot, but a lot of chat in an office, especially surrounding sport, and sometimes you've got to take it. And if you react like that, you can expect action. So whatever your view, I think Southgate has got on the front foot here, made a decision that they're going to take this story head on rather than allow it to fester and then potentially come out in an uncontrollable way. They've come out, they've said what's happened, or some of what's happened. They said this is the action they're going to take, and they've been strong with that. So I suppose we have to respect that, because we're not necessarily 100% sure of exactly what's happened. And obviously we weren't there, they were there. If you want to get in touch with us, has Southgate made the right decision to drop Sterling for Thursday's game against Montenegro? Call us on 0208 70 20 558 or tweet us at Love Sport Radio. You can also WhatsApp us on that number as well. We'll be back after this.
This is Love Sport.
So we're going to be continuing talking all things Premier League. For West Ham, it's been, well, a season of two halves at the moment. First six games, a pretty decent start for the Hammers. The last six games have not been so much, and it's been a pretty terrible run of form for West Ham. Manuel Pellegrini coming under a bit more pressure as every game goes by, especially in light of a 3-0 defeat away at Burnley last weekend. Earlier on the Breakfast Show with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's, they were joined by former West Ham man John Moncur. And they started by talking about the money spent by Manuel Pellegrini and if funds should be made available in January.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the thing. You've hit the nail on the head. He's had a lot of money, and he's, you know, at the start of the season, we're all saying, well, he's used it wisely, because up to the last month, you know, everything looked really good. Players were improving, yeah. You know. He's made some good signings. He's got a good blend there of youth as well. And it's just really gone sort of downward after the Palace game. They've lost confidence. I mean, if you looked at it, if we beat Crystal Palace, we'd have gone third. And all of a sudden now we're teetering above relegation. So it is a problem. Something's gone wrong. A lot of players have lost form, and, you know, it always comes back to the manager, sadly.
Well, that's it. I had we often talk about it in here, and Paul Mortimer was on the show early on in the season. He'd seen West Ham in pre-season, saw them early season. He was predicting they're going to challenge top six, and they looked brilliant early in the season. I want to ask you, and this is coming from an ex-goalkeeper, Fabianski getting injured, Roberto coming in, Fabianski being such a key member of this squad and brilliant last season, brilliant the start of this season. It's been a tough, really tough time for Roberto. Has that had a huge impact?
Oh, massive. I mean, you know, I didn't really want to bring an individual and say it's all down to him, because that's unfair. But the problem is, a goalkeeper, it's such a pivotal position. And what seems to be happening for me, you know, your defenders that were doing really well and playing at a decent, consistent level seem to have lost a bit of confidence. And that's what can happen. You know, you look at some of the goals now, they're in a position where perhaps they're trying to protect the goalkeeper and they're getting wrong-sided a little bit. But it just shows you how important Fabianski is to West Ham. I mean, he's been brilliant. He was our player of the year last year. So it's been a massive, you know, factor in the results, I think.
Yeah, and I can imagine being a bit of a frustration as well, seeing Adrian do as well as he's done for Liverpool in the games that he's played, which seemed like a strange one to me. I want to talk about Pellegrini a bit more, though. 22 wins, 24 defeats, 57 games in charge now. So more defeats than wins. It's his worst win percentage as a manager. Do you think he's still the right man to move West Ham forward?
I'll be honest, I didn't think we'd be having this conversation a month ago, you know, because everything was, as you say, moving in the right direction. I think that the whole ground was upbeat. The whole club was upbeat with us, with, you know, the way we was going. I just think major decisions like, you know, Adrian and him not being there in such a pivotal position, and it has led to the demise in results. You know, if you look at the goalkeeper at the moment, he's a fine shot stopper, but it seems to happen after he's thrown the game away, and that's the frustrating part of it. So there's things where key decisions, it all comes back to Pellegrini, and I think that just at the moment he's run out of ideas a little bit. I don't know what's happened with you know, our bigger players in terms of your Anderson, now Lanzini's injured, but our flair players ain't been performing, even down to Declan Rice. He's not sort of consistently playing how he was. I don't know what's happened, but as I say, it all comes back to the manager, and I think that now it's sort of, now we don't want to be in this situation where we're in a relegation battle.
Well, it is a strange one because obviously 16th, but only 4 points away from Sheffield United in fifth and 5 points off the relegation. So actually technically closer to a Europa League spot than they are relegation. However, I suppose the thing that worries me from a West Ham perspective, the next four games, it's Tottenham, Chelsea, Arsenal and Wolves away. So there is the potential four games that it might be minimal points from those games.
Yeah, but the thing is with West Ham, you know, we're more than likely to go out and beat Tottenham at the weekend. It's, you know, that's how we sort of roll at the moment. I think we're good enough when everyone's fired up and on their game, we can beat anyone. So I think there's going to be a massive, you know, we've got the international break now, and we're going to look at, they'll be doing things behind the scenes, working towards this, you know, run of, you say, four games that look tough. I think everyone will raise their game. And as you say, you only need a couple of wins and you're back in the position you was. It's so fragile at the moment, the way the table is. Yeah. But we have got to get a result, there's no doubt about it.
And what's the atmosphere like currently at the London Stadium?
Well, it's gone a little bit lately. Obviously, you know, it's all down to results. It was very upbeat. I mean, the first part of the season, It was like we was carrying on from last year and improving. So it was everything was rosy. But I think the performances have been poor. That's the key. You know, you look at, we couldn't break Sheffield United down. They sat there and we just looked stagnant in playing in front of them. Mm. And that was frustrating for the fans. And then the Newcastle game, it was like, I mean, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was like they're sucking you in, winning the ball off you in their own box, and it was like an American football match, hitting a big Hail Mary over Zabaleta's head. And the fella, it's like they'd worked on it, you know. We'll just attack them over the top on the break, and we looked so vulnerable that it was a big worry. So that was a big concern for the ground. I mean, everyone was getting, obviously, unrested over that game. But something needs to change. And I think that these games, really, the Tottenham game's going to come at the right time. I don't think Spurs are much better off than us, to be honest with you. So it's a game we can really bounce back and get a result.
Well, they were the two for me. You touched on the Newcastle. I mean, Newcastle could have been five up, generally, genuinely, maybe even six up in that game. And of course, Burnley made light work of West Ham. Will be a really interesting run of fixtures. Declan Rice said that West Ham were bullied all over the pitch by Burnley in the last game. What needs to happen in that Spurs game? He's got a couple of weeks now to figure it out, I guess. What would your advice be for the team going into that game? Is it a question of trying to contain Tottenham and actually just trying to, I suppose, get it right defensively first and look to build on that?
Well, I think, you know, for me, you can't be as open. That's for sure. Like, especially at the London Stadium, you can't be as open as we've been, especially particularly against Newcastle. I think that it will be a different type of game against Spurs, and I think it will suit us. I mean, look, everyone knows the Tottenham game's massive anyway, as a London derby. So, as Declan said there, we're not going to be second best. There's no way that we can come out and be short of, you know, that competitive edge. And the game's changed a little bit. It ain't about, you know, smashing tackles. And you can't do that now. But I think there's a time and a place for it. and you've got to be stand up and be counted. Like, there was a couple of goals there at Burnley where I'm looking at the centre-half being brushed aside so easy. You know, that can't happen. And, you know, when you're playing against Harry Kane, who's a physical player, and you've got to stand up and be counted, especially physically. That's the one thing all over the park you've got to do. So I'm sure that'll happen. You know, as you say, they've got a long time to think about it and get their, you know, get their act together. And I think that it'll be a different type of game. And Tottenham, you know, we're always going to be up for that game as West Ham players and supporters. So I think that's a come at the right time, and we'll bounce back, I think, I'm sure.
Love Sport. This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to be talking all things Norwich now, and I'm delighted to say we're joined by Chris Reeve from the Talk Norwich City podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Chris. I'm sure Friday night was disappointing. It felt like a massive game between the bottom two sides. Norwich at home needing a win against Watford without a win. Watford 1-2 now. How disappointing a night was it, and what are the repercussions from Friday night?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. I always appreciate coming on Love Sport. I'm really grateful for it. I think, yes, it was a very dismal performance. Horrific, in fact. And I can totally understand why neutrals will look at that and be like, nah, there's no way Norwich is staying up now. However, I believe it's 7 of the last 10 sides that have been in our position in the last 10 seasons have survived to the current points we're on. Look, Norwich fans knew we were going to go on this sort of run. We knew that there was going to be runs, you know, very barren runs, 5, 6, 7 games now. Without a win is very disappointing. We've showed some promise here and there, but it has been very poor indeed. So it was tough, and it's the first time that our culture has been tested, and it's probably the first reality check of being in the Premier League and even coming up against a team like Watford at home on Friday, and they've signed a player for 30 million. We haven't spent 30 million in the last 3 seasons. So it's difficult for Norwich. It's an uphill struggle. However, there is some relative optimism in the fact that, you know, we're not done just yet. I wouldn't write us off just yet.
What's happened, Chris, since that fantastic night for Norwich fans when they beat Manchester City, where not only did they win the game, but they deserved to win that game. They played brilliantly. Is it a case of injuries are mounted up? Is it defensive injuries as well counted against them? The lack of service to Tim Mpuku? If you had to pick kind of one area, what's been the reason why Norwich have had this slump in form?
Injuries, without a shadow of doubt. However, within the last 2 games, we've had more or less a fully fit squad, apart from the fact that we're missing our centre-back, Christoph Zimmermann. And without him, we can't move our centre-back, our covering centre-back, Tete or Amadou, forward. So it is having a massive impact on the team that we can't cut teams apart. We can't stop the rot. I mean, there's actually a multitude of things going wrong at the moment, so it's difficult to pick one. But I would say the main thing is injuries. That's the main reason for the barren run. But if I had to pick one more, very, very recently, we've just not been able to supply Timo Pukki. You would have seen the sheer amount of pace and intelligence the guy has got. You saw that at the start of the season. You saw him take the chances that he was given, and he will. And it's been purely at the moment the fact that he's just not been given the service. But don't worry, we're not done just yet.
That was one of the things I wanted to ask you about, Chris, was the goals drying up for Timo Pukki, because on the face of it, if you just look at the simple statistics, you're thinking, well, Pukki's not playing so well. But when you actually look at the statistics of how much Norwich play in the final third of their opposition, that perhaps highlights the problem that it's not necessarily a case of Pukki not converting chances. The problem has been getting the ball to Pukki in those chances. So how does Daniel Farke go about giving him more service, bringing Timo Pukki more into the game? Because he has shown, both in the Championship and at the start of this season, that when you give him opportunities, he will score goals for you.
100%. I think that a really important part for Norwich City now is that kind of centre defensive midfield position. I think that once we've got that covered off, we'll be okay, and we'll be able to hold the ball in midfield. We'll be able to dominate. You would have seen our stats from last season. You know, our pass completion percentages, are the way that we hold our possession, the way that we bring the ball forwards. We're not afraid to, some people call it naive, but actually I see it as quite clever, as actually we have tried to grab whole games by the scruff of the neck and go and attack teams. And so that's what Daniel Farke needs to getting back to. And actually, the reason why that probably hasn't happened in the last few weeks is, we've had two players for us, probably our most important players, Emi Buendia and Moritz Leitner, who unfortunately haven't hit their normal consistent performance levels. I think that that is down to confidence. I think it's down to the fact that they're still very new to the league. I think there's a long way to go. But what do we need to do to get the ball to Teemu Pukki? It's certainly sorting out that midfield.
I'm sure just one final question, Chris, on Friday night's game. The worst thing that could have happened for Norwich was conceding an early goal, and that's exactly what happened within 76 seconds of the game starting. De La Feu gave Watford the lead. Was that, obviously, a game was 90 minutes long, and in theory, Norwich then had 88 minutes to get back in the game, but was that the real killer moment that at home, in a big game where Norwich would have been thinking, this is an opportunity to get a bit of a run going now, get a win against the side without a win, but conceding within 2 minutes at home, that must have been just such a dagger to the hearts of all Norwich fans.
Yes, it was definitely a killer blow. Conceding to Watford that early on in the game was devastating to the team. There was a lot of talking done behind the scenes prior to that game. Having spoken with Tom Tribal afterwards, who's our midfielder, he said, there was a lot of talking done. And, when that goal went in, the lads knew that it was going to be a real, real challenge. And to be honest with you, we just never looked like getting it back from there, which is very, very unlike Norwich City. And I understand how a lot of neutrals will be looking at it and go, nah, game over, Norwich haven't got a chance. But, there is a lot of fight in us. And so it is off colour for us to not be able to get back a team. But to concede that early on, after doing so much work behind the scenes to make sure it's right, was devastating and extremely costly. And now, it's a much, much needed international break for Norwich City. We go away to Everton next. We've then got Arsenal at home. We've then got Southampton away, I believe. So, I think that it's going to be hard. But Norwich City, when they've been in the Premier League, we've always been up against it. We've always been one of the smaller clubs.
I wanted, Chris, to just talk a little bit about the January transfer window, because inevitably we're in November, still 2 months out, but people are talking about the window. Norwich only spent £1.5 million back in the summer. Do you think that there is a need to invest, or do you think that Norwich will stick by the principles and say, we didn't spend a lot of money in the summer, we're not suddenly now going to change our plans and go and spend heavily in January?
100%, we won't change our plans. We won't spend heavily, however, I think we would be extremely stupid not to invest in the defensive area. And I believe that we're probably one or two short, actually in midfield as well now. Norwich City have got to make a considered gamble, but I don't think we will go all out in the market and spend millions. We certainly don't have that sort of money to spend anyway, to be very honest with you. So, that's our plans for January. I know what Stuart Webber's like. I know that he'll be stubborn. He will not spend money gambles. And that's what Norwich City have done in the past. And actually, what's more important to Norwich City as a club right now is actually to make sure we are financially secure. So I highly, highly doubt we will go out and spend tons of money in January.
And one final thing, Chris. Inevitably, at this time of the season, a lot of managers are under pressure, and there's so much talk of probably six or seven clubs that might be looking to change their manager. However, it feels that with Norwich and Daniel Farke, that even if, obviously, and this isn't something you want to hear, Chris, even if Norwich were to get relegated, it does feel like Daniel Farke isn't under any real pressure for his job. Is that the right way of going about it, that you say you're 100% behind your manager no matter what happens? Or is it a case of, let's see how the season is at the moment? He's got our full backing, but if performances really slip and we're in a really disastrous situation, then we might change our opinion of that in a couple of months' time.
Look, there'll always be pressure on a manager after a barren run like we've been on. But ultimately, we would be absolutely crazy to get rid of Daniel Farke. I think that we'd be crazy to get rid of him, even if we were to get relegated. We cannot build on the foundations that we've started by flip-flopping between football managers. I'm very proud of the fact that I support Norwich City, and I'm very proud of the fact that we do things properly. We treat people with respect. We don't just bin managers when they're trying to build something. We're trying to build something bigger. than just a one season wonder where we just get, you know, when we win the league or, you know, if we get relegated. I think that Daniel Farke deserves way more respect than to be sacked at this stage. And certainly I would advise if anyone a betting man or lady, I really, really wouldn't place your money on Daniel Farke to get sacked, because that is simply not going to happen. And I'm so, so pleased that it won't. Ultimately, Daniel Farke is doing absolutely everything in his power to impose himself on games now. He's making subs earlier. He's tactically astute. He's learned so much in the time that he's had at Norwich. And the reason why he's not doing so well at the moment is simply the players have been letting him down.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Chris. That was Chris Reeve from the Talk Norwich City podcast. Full backing of Daniel Farke. As I mentioned, it feels extremely unlikely that Daniel Farke will lose his job. I mean, there are so many clubs currently in the Premier League that are either on the verge of or are seriously considering changing, whether it be Southampton with Ralf Hasenhüttl, Everton with Marco Silva, Arsenal with Unai Emery, Manchester United with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Tottenham with Mauricio Pochettino. I'm trying to think whether there are any more out there. West Ham with Manuel Pellegrini. There are just so many clubs that potentially could pull the trigger, but it doesn't. Even if, as I said, Chris probably didn't want to hear it, even if Norwich did get relegated this season, I don't think there's a chance Daniel Farke will be sat to think that he's done, that they view him as a brilliant man that has taken them up into the Premier League, which is a terrific achievement in itself. And therefore they wouldn't make that change even if they went back down into the Championship for Norwich. It feels like they need that spark again. They need a bit of confidence, because when they beat City, people were probably saying, oh, there's no way Norwich are going to get relegated. The way they've played in those first four or five games of the season, they're not going to get relegated. Suddenly, six games later, after 12 games, they're 7 points bottom of the table and 4 points from safety. Things look a little bit different, but it does feel like Norwich fans and the board will remain faithful and patient with Daniel Farke. Even if this season doesn't go particularly well, it seems like he is one of those managers. There are a few in the Premier League, there aren't that many, but there are a few that you feel like they will be safe no matter what, and they will trust in the manager at the helm. So even though Norwich are bottom, Farke is under no real pressure, it feels, but it does seem necessary for Norwich to spend. And Chris said it there in January, defensively they need reinforcements. Don't go and spend ridiculous money, don't go crazy, but be meticulous, and they do need some defensive cover in the January transfer window.
This is Love Sport.
Saving money on your interior stains and finishes now at Menards. Provide exceptional color to your staining project with Minwax Color Series. It applies evenly and dries fast with just one coat. Get a quart of Minwax Color Series wood stain in over 240 colors. On sale now through April 12th. Visit our paint desk and let our helpful team get you everything you need for your stain project today. Save big money at Menards.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.